Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and today I am beyond excited to share an interview I did recently with Emily Henry. Emily Henry writes stories about love and family for both teens and adults. She studied creative writing at Hope College and the New York Center for Art and Media Studies and now spends most of her time in Cincinnati, Ohio and the part of Kentucky just beneath it. She is the best-selling author of Beach Read and her latest novel, People We Meet on Vacation, is on our shelves now. I had an absolute blast chatting with her, and I can't wait for you to listen. So without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Emily Henry. Hi, Emily Henry. How are you?
I am so great. How are you?
I'm doing super well. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because not only do I love, obviously, Beach Read and People We Meet on Vacation, but I have to tell you, way back five-ish years ago in 2016, The Love That Split the World was my staff pick twice.
Oh, thank you so much.
Like, wow. When I looked up because I was like, I know that name. Why do I know that name? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, yep.
Wow, that's so nice.
I loved that book so much. There was a time when I was pretty much exclusively reading YA at the bookstore. I was like the YA person. And I would shove that book at everyone who walked by. I'd be like, no, you need this.
Thank you. You're probably responsible for most of the copies sold then.
Hopefully. I loved that book. So it's been so fun to see you like grow from there and have these amazing, amazing books. I could tell from the start.
Oh, thank you. That really is like just the ultimate compliment.
Oh, well, I mean, you and romance, let me tell you. You had me hooked from the very beginning. Why don't you, for our listeners who haven't read your books yet, why don't you give us the little elevator pitches for both Beach Read and your new one?
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so it's been a while since I've had to pitch Beach Read, so we'll see how much rambling happens. Okay, so Beach Read, my debut novel in adult romance, was the story of January Andrews, who was a romance writer herself, but her father had died, and at his funeral, she discovered he had this secret lake house and a mistress that he shared it with, and all of these secrets that really like rocked her world and her faith in like happily ever after and the romance story genre. And so because of that, she, at the start of the book, hasn't really written anything in like over a year. And she's running out of money. She and her boyfriend have broken up. Like everything has kind of come crashing down in the aftermath of this big lie. And so as a last resort, she has to go stay at the lake house that her father owned on the shore of Lake Michigan while she tries to finish her next book and sell this house to just kind of get it out from under her and be done with the whole like sordid affair. And while she's there, she finds out that her next door neighbor is actually her creative writing rival from college, who's gone on to have this very illustrious, like serious literary career. He's very well reviewed and he's like a darling of the New York Times and the New Yorker and, you know, just taken very seriously and sort of her opposite and equal, whereas, you know, she's very commercial and has kind of been, you know, not taken very seriously in her career. Mm-hmm. And so as they strike up this kind of weird friendship, she discovers he's also in a writing rut and they make a deal to swap genres, with the bet being that whoever sells their book first has bragging rights forever and will get like an endorsement from this person, the other person on their cover and all of that. So in order to learn how to write each other's kinds of books, they also will take each other on field trips once a week. So January will take Gus to like a local carnival. I couldn't remember a single other thing that happened in the book. She takes him line dancing at one point. She just kind of like giving him romantic comedy scenarios. Whereas Gus has been doing this research for a book about a cult that ended very badly. So he is taking January to interview surviving members of that cult, people who lost family members, et cetera. It's like very much not a fun, good time. it's really just kind of like the story of these two people, one who has been a kind of cynic for his whole life and had kind of a challenging childhood and upbringing. And then one who's been an optimist for most of her life and came from a very loving family, but has had that sort of upset. And it's both of them kind of trying to meet in the middle and figure out what they think about the world. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's probably more than you need to know about
this. No, that was great.
More than like, you probably don't have to read it now. I'm just
kidding. But you should, because it's fantastic.
Because then I get to keep my job. Then People We Meet on Vacation, my sophomore novel, follows Alex and Poppy, who are two unlikely best friends since college. They meet and they immediately know they have nothing in common because he is wearing khakis and she is like, I don't remember exactly what she's wearing, but it's something vintage and bright and ridiculous and probably made of polyester. And he's just kind of like looking for the library and she's looking for like a themed party maybe that she can go to. And so they don't really expect to become friends, but through chance, they end up sharing a ride home for the summer and this unexpected friendship blossoms. And over the years, as their lives carry them off in different directions, they maintain their closeness by taking this yearly summer trip. Sometimes just the two of them, sometimes they have partners coming with them. But yeah, it's like kind of what grounds their friendship when the rest of the year they have to be apart. And so at the start of the book, Poppy has actually not spoken to Alex in 2 years. And on their last trip, you know, something went horribly awry. You don't know what happened. You just know that their friendship didn't survive it. And so the book starts there and follows Poppy as she convinces Alex to take one last trip, try and fix their friendship. But interspersed throughout that, you get the story of all of their previous vacations and how they got to that point.
It was such a perfect book to read, like right now, to be just like a little armchair traveler, like basically, you know, taking all these vacations in my brain. It was amazing. And one of the, I mean, it's such a good example of books as a literal escape, right?
Yeah,
like
for sure.
I'm escaping quarantine and I'm going to go to Croatia or Sweden, maybe if we get there. I love asking authors how they think their characters would do in quarantine.
Yes.
How do you think Poppy and Alex would do?
Poppy is not doing so hot. I've been thinking about this too. I've just been like, I wonder. So like thinking about January and Gus from Beach Read, I'm like, I think they're fine. I think that unfortunately, like they're that couple that's just been like, it's been a great year. Like nothing really changed for us.
They stayed inside and wrote for a year. Exactly. They didn't even realize.
Like, literally nothing changed. And like, you know, they live on the beach. Like they can go to the lake and lay out and they're fine. They're good. Poppy is not doing well. Poppy is bouncing off of the walls and Alex is probably having to like take a lot of walks to kind of like get space from her. And she's having to take a lot of walks just to like make eye contact with people above their masks.
Yeah.
I think that Alex probably, okay. I think Poppy brought home a dog. I think Poppy brought home a dog. And Alex was just sort of like, why did you not even talk to me about this first? But he agrees to keep the dog as a foster. And then of course, like he falls in love with the dog. And then I think eventually like he is begging her to get a cat and she doesn't want a cat, but then I think they probably just like find a stray and the cat loves the dog. And so then Poppy loves the cat because she's just like, oh, you're a cat who can hang with dogs. And that makes me feel secure about myself.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
So and both better now that they have like object to focus on. It's like the pets.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like both pets would have to be like super bedraggled and like the cat would be like missing an eye or something.
For sure. I think I was thinking the same thing. I think the dog looks like it just came out of a dumpster and it was like scruffy and like small to medium, but just like wiry hair and really a really ugly little dog. And the cat, definitely is like a mangy little cat. That loves just curling up and sleeping on the dog's butt.
Yes. Yes. I think we need this short story.
Yeah. Maybe so. We'll see.
I think we need this. Would you consider yourself more of a Poppy or an Alex?
I am more of a Poppy. Although it's really hard to say. I really do always feel like I'm splitting myself up between characters and you know, I think with characters, we tend to have like, not just two-dimensional characters, but there's still a sort of a limit to what's believable. Whereas I think we as people in real life are very changeable and have very many different like subversions of ourselves. So like Alex, I also like often would like to stay home and read. Like, yeah. I think almost anyone listening to this podcast can relate to that.
Yep.
But I also was not doing so hot in quarantine. And I definitely had the poppy of it all happening where it was like, I got vaccinated a couple months ago and I like immediately scheduled like 3 trips. It was just like, I haven't done anything in a year. I don't know how to write anymore. Like I'm so bored of myself. I just want to like see someone who isn't me or my husband. And yeah, I mean, I think I definitely dress more like Poppy. I'm a little bit more chaotic. Alex is like clean and tidy and I am not those things.
Yeah, that's valid. Yeah, I think I think I skew more Alex in the like introvert, no yeah. thank you. I will just quietly like read observe. but I think there are definitely times when I delve into yeah. Poppy.
Like suddenly I am tap dancing on a stage. Like I don't know how I got here, which is like often my experience. Like I'm a very introverted person, but people don't know that about me until they've known me for a while, because if I'm at a party, then I'm like, well, yeah, like make room. Yep. Here I am.
That's amazing. I want to talk a little bit about, Beach Read is, you know, obviously it's a novel about, it's about grief. It's a novel about romance, but it's also about grief and loss and kind of finding yourself, but it's also about writer's block. How have you been doing in like quarantine? Do you struggle with writers? I feel like everybody struggles with writer's block.
Yeah. But. I think the only person who doesn't struggle with writer's block is Stephen King.
I was going to say Stephen King.
He's just fine. He can do it. Like every day he's like, yeah, I wrote another book today. But I will say, okay. So first of all, at the beginning of quarantine, I was not productive in any way. Like I was lying on my couch, just kind of shivering with dread for the first, and now it's like, you know, we've been kind of in this state for so long that it's kind of easy to navigate, you know, what you need to do to feel safe more or less. But in those first couple of weeks when it was all so new, it was just like, I was a mess and I wasn't getting anything done. I mean, I wasn't watching TV. I wasn't reading. I wasn't cleaning my house. It was just like, I am existing. Mm-hmm, That's mm-hmm. the only thing happening. And then, you know, I kind of found my new rhythm and all of that. But what I have realized about writer's block for me is that there are really two different paths that it takes. There's one, which I think I'm nearing right now, which is I just need to live more life to be able to write. And I think sometimes it's like, I want to just be writing all the time. And I will have to accept like, I need to go see friends. I need to take a trip. I need to have new experiences and to think new thoughts and be confronted with new issues and all of that stuff that makes exploring characters interesting to me. And that's like totally fair and valid. Like sometimes you just are out of ideas and you need to go live your life because you can't write about nothing. Right. I mean, I guess you can try. I guess that was the whole like premise of Seinfeld, was like, you can write a show about nothing. But yeah, so that I try to be forgiving of, but there's another thing that I would call daily writer's block, which is that when I'm drafting, I wake up most days with this like knot in my stomach and I'm just scared to write. Mm-hmm. I'm scared it's not going to work. I'm scared the words won't come, or I'll write, but it will be bad. All of that. And I, over quarantine, really had this like stark realization that what was happening was I was so afraid of failing that I was like self-rejecting. Like I was so afraid to fail by writing the wrong thing or writing it badly, or just afraid that I wouldn't be able to write, that I was just making it so absolutely I'm going to fail. Cause if you don't write, then you've already failed. And so I found this to be so helpful, because now every day when I wake up with that knot of dread, I listen to it for a second and I'm just like, okay, you're afraid to fail and you're going to write anyway. And it's okay. No matter what you write, Nothing has to happen, but you're going to write your 2000 words today. And I'll turn off my internet. Sometimes I'll put my phone in the other room. Like, I'll minimize distractions in every way and give myself like an amount of time. And I just, and a number of words that I have to hit, and I will write whatever. And by that, I mean, it is not uncommon for me to start every writing day with just like having my characters take a walk or like go to the grocery store. No plot, no tension, no stakes. But I do that because when I've gotten past that first hurdle and forced my way in, then I will eventually hit on something. So it might be like at the very end of that day, I'm like, oh, I finally know where this needs to go. Or this character just ran into this character, and now I like realize what this book is trying to do. And so much of what I write in my first drafts gets removed later because nothing's happening. Yeah. But I figured the book out because I made myself work anyway.
I think that's such good advice. I love the idea of just having your characters do sort of mundane things just to like see where they go, get in their heads a little bit. Like,
exactly. I call it hiking around, and that's how I think about it, where it's like you're just sort of exploring your world. And again, like the point is you must cut all of the boring stuff later. Right. But it's so freeing to just be like, I have to write 2000 words. Nothing has to happen. And eventually, by giving yourself permission to, you do tend to kind of enter that flow state eventually.
That's awesome. In terms of, I feel like we all sort of write what we know, and in pulling from our lives, I'm curious about all the traveling in people we meet on vacation. How much of the traveling did you pull from your own stories, like your own life?
Yeah, I pulled almost everything from my own life. The one exception was I haven't been to Palm Springs since I was a kid, and I was fully planning. So the main, for those of you who have not read yet, the main like present day storyline is a trip to Palm Springs. And I fully planned to go there during my revision process and just sort of check all the information that I had found online and see if anything new happened that I wanted to kind of insert into those scenes. And then the pandemic hit and I did not go to Palm Springs. But the rest of those trips, you know, one of the really fun things about them or about the book has been as friends and family read it, getting the text messages where they're like, oh my gosh, like our trip to New Orleans or whatever, because the places are all like places that I've been. And in some cases, you know, I changed the names of things because I wanted, you know, if I want to write about like somebody meeting the owner of a spot, I don't really know how to negotiate that where it's like, I'm writing a fictional owner for like a real like hotel or whatever.
Right.
I'll have to like kind of change the details, but it's still very clearly like a stand-in for existing places.
That's so cool. I was cackling reading about in their current modern day trip, the tiny little like Airbnb with no air conditioning. It's the hottest. It's like, the room is like 85 degrees.
No, and that, so, okay. So that fun fact about that, that was inspired by my real life air conditioning situation.
Oh no.
When I moved into my current place, the air conditioning, I think every apartment or house that I've ever lived in has had the air conditioning break like immediately. Like I always end up moving in the summer and it always breaks immediately. Of course. And in the past, you know, like I've had landlords. So it's like, they'll be like, okay, well, I need to get 700 quotes before we fix this. So I'll see you in November and then we'll fix your air conditioning. But when I moved into my house, the air conditioning did that exact thing. So it would kind of get higher and higher and higher as the day went on. And if you tried to turn the temperature down any more than 1 degree at a time, for some reason that would just break it. It would just get hotter. And so like, it was this constant game of turning it down 1 degree and just like kind of waiting and watching. And then it would get down a degree and you'd turn it down another degree and suddenly it goes up 3 degrees. And it was not a good time. It was like, I was trying to like install floors in my home and like 90 degree heat inside, just not a good time. But it was really fun to write that for them and to put them in that situation once I was done with it on my end.
Oh, I was absolutely howling. I was like, these poor people.
It's like, you know, we're all using Airbnb these days, and it's like 85% of the time they're great, and 15% of the time you're like, this is a nightmare and we will never speak of this again.
Right. So that was obviously really fun. Do you have other like favorite scenes to write, and do you have like least favorite scenes?
Oh man, least favorite. I mean, I'm sure I did, but I don't remember what it was. I've like painted over it to be nice and rosy in my memory at this
totally.
Point. But I loved writing Poppy's scene with her mom, which, yeah. You know, I feel like if I say that, you immediately know what it is if you've read it.
Immediately know.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just have never really had the experience of, I mean, I co-wrote a book with my friend Brittany Cavallero. We wrote Hello Girls, which is like a teen Thelma and Louise. And during that, I would like laugh all the time because we would be writing in real time in a Google document and just making each other laugh. But I had never made myself laugh from writing until writing the scene with Poppy and her mom before she and Alex go to Nashville. And
so
like,
good.
That's just like my favorite scene I've probably ever written.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh my God. I feel like I know Poppy's family so well.
I do too. I mean, I didn't really know exactly as I was writing, I didn't really know exactly who they were going to be. And then when I wrote that scene, it was just like, okay, I know them.
Yep. I love the way that they yell everything they say in just, and not in an angry way, just in like, they're just super loud.
Yeah. Just like shouting from opposite sides of the house. Or even from the same room.
Oh my God. That scene. Yeah, that might be, that's definitely one of my favorite
the highlight of the book. I would say not, it's like nothing. It's not nothing to do with the romance really. It's just like a separate thing that I was so glad got to stay in it until the end.
It just so firmly grounds like who her family is and like, and I love the way she handles it. I love Alex's reaction to it. And listeners, you're just going to have to go read the book. You're just going to have to go. And then you'll know. And then you'll know.
And you know what? That's beautiful.
Exactly. I think I have like one last question for you basically, which is, I love the themes of your books. I love that in Beach Read, and I touched on this earlier, that, you know, it's not just a romance novel, right? It is, which I don't want to say just a romance novel. That because I love romance. It's like my favorite genre. But there's so much to it. Beach Read is about grief, and it is about loss, and it is about finding yourself and letting go. And writer's block. And People We Meet on Vacation is about like discovering yourself and allowing yourself to be your true self and like letting go of your past and letting yourself kind of be like, okay, yeah, no, this is who I am. And I'm going to let myself be that person. Yeah. I love that. I love that your books have these really, really wonderful themes. And I'm curious, like, what do you hope that your readers get out of your books?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think first and foremost, despite all of like the themes that do have a lot of meaning for me, I just do want people to have like a really nice time. But if they're gonna go a little bit deeper, then I think it's exactly what you were saying. Like, I feel like I spent so much time in my like teens and early 20s, just really trying to project this like version of myself where it's like, this is who I am. This is who I am. This is who I am. And like, this is how I want to be seen and whatever. And like getting a little bit older and just being like, I don't need to be this curated version of myself. And it just becomes really a lot easier and more natural to just, you know, to not have that like strong, to not need that strong identity. I think a lot about identity as a writer. And I think a lot of artists do, where like early on in my writing career, it was super important for me to claim myself as a writer before I was published. And I think for a lot of like writers who have not yet published and hesitate to call themselves writers, I think that is a mistake, because once you start claiming yourself as a writer, you are making your, decisions based around that. Like, for example, when I started taking writing very seriously, my friends knew that I did not hang out during the days on Saturdays and Sundays because I had a full-time job and those were my writing days. And so I would see them at night, but I would call that like working. So I would be like, I can't do anything on Saturday or Sunday because I'm going to be working. And they knew I had a full-time job. So at the time, like on normal hours. So at the time they were really confused. Like, what do you mean you're going to be working? And eventually it became second nature where they knew, like, I take this very seriously. I consider this like my work. And so when they invited me to things, it wouldn't be like, can you do this? It'd be like, are you going to be working on Saturday or Sunday? And they started thinking of it as my work long before anyone was paying me for it to be my work. And that was super helpful. But then now, being in my 30s, I have found myself having to loosen my grip on that identity. Okay. And to say, I've been having so many conversations with writer and artist friends lately about the same exact thing of saying, like, I needed to say I am an artist, and now I need to say I make art. And separating that out and saying, like, I am a person. I'm a person, and that's what matters most. My personhood matters most, and my heart and my relationships and all of that. And writing is what I do. And I think with Poppy, you know, so much of the book is Poppy being like, I have built my identity around this concept of me as a free spirit, like traveler, a travel writer, like loves meeting people, like, you know, I'm going to see the whole world. And it's scary for her to get to the point where she's realizing that doesn't make her that happy anymore. Because if that's not who she is, then she has to figure out like a whole new life for herself. And I think it's really easy for some reason in our culture to forget that you are just you. Like, no matter what you're doing, if you lose a job, or if a job is no longer tenable for you, or your artistic aspirations are no longer exciting to you, any of that, you are still you. And that's the most valuable part of you. Like, what you make is just an expression of what's inside of you. And I really think that that's such a valuable lesson. And it's really hard in a world that's so like productivity driven, and where we get so much of our sense of worth from that. But like, those things can always be taken from you. Like, the external trappings of your life are impermanent. And it's way less scary if you have embraced yourself as a person, and you don't need to be this other thing additionally, because when you have to move on, when you have to let that go, you're not losing your whole sense of self.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I will let you go. I know that you are doing your virtual tours and lots of interviews. So I will just say thank you, thank you, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Ryan. This was really great. Such a good conversation. Such good questions. Really grateful.
Thank you. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast. And I can't wait to just chuck your books at people, just as I've been doing for apparently forever.
Keep doing it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you again to Emily Henry for chatting with me. People We Meet on Vacation is available now. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!